Genesis 33 and verse 16. Maybe we should just read verse 5 from chapter 34 first, and then we understand what was happened, why the statement is made in verse 5 of chapter 34. It says, "And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah his daughter. Now his sons were with his cattle in the field, and Jacob held his peace." In other words, he said nothing until the sons were come. Now back to verse 16 of 33. "So Esau returned that day on his way unto Seir, and Jacob journeyed to Succoth, and built him an house, and made booths for his cattle, and therefore the name of the place is called Succoth. And Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Paddan Aram, and pitched his tent before the city, and he bought a parcel of a field, where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. And he erected there an altar and called it Elo Israel." Now to the end of the chapter and verse 30. "And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, ye have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and I being few in number. They shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house. And they said," that is the brethren still speaking, "should he deal with our sister as with an harlot?" And then back to the first verse. That was a little reverse reading here today. First verse of chapter 34 says, "And Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land." And then, of course, we have his statement. And now in chapter 35 and verse 1. "And God said unto Jacob, arise and go up to Bethel, and dwell there, and make there an altar unto God that appeared unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau thy brother. Then Jacob said unto his household and to all that were with him, put away the strange gods that are among you, and be clean, and change your garments, and let us arise and go up to Bethel. I will make there an altar unto God who answered me in the day of my distress." Seemingly, Jacob had forgot about that till now. "And was with me in the way which I went. And they gave unto Jacob all the strange gods which were in their hand, and all their earrings which were in their ears. And Jacob hid them under the oak which was by Shechem. And they journeyed, and the terror of God was upon the cities," or the fear of God was upon the cities, "that were round about them, and they did not pursue after the sons of Jacob. So Jacob came to Luz, which is the land of Canaan, that is Bethel, he and all the people that were with them. And he built there an altar and called the place El Bethel, because there God appeared unto him when he fled from the face of his brother." Well, I certainly do not want to conclude the afternoon meeting today by taking a turn at jumping on Jacob. I don't think there's likely any of us, to be honest, at least I would like to think that that's how I would approach any kind of ministry or gospel preaching, is in the spirit of absolute honesty, as all of our brethren would seek to do, but I relate a lot with this man Jacob. I think there's plenty of business that flows in the blood of most of these brethren here in Vancouver, in the past and in the present, and like myself, would have to confess maybe at times a little too much. And somehow, some way, we relate to this man Jacob. But of course, Jacob maybe did have failures and much that we could take up about Jacob, but there's commendable things about him too. I trust that if I am really slanting it a little on the negative side this afternoon, it is because we have to learn valuable lessons. I trust before God that what I have this afternoon at the close of the meeting follows exactly what we've been just now hearing, and even with what our meeting commenced with from our brother Reed this afternoon relative to the pitfall of a good man like Jehoshaphat. However, in these three chapters, I want you to notice particularly that there are three voices that suddenly appear. The first voice that we hear from, of course, is the voice of Jacob. Jacob has something to say in chapter 34 at the beginning. But what he does is he holds his peace. So I learned from Jacob that he said, "Too little, too late." When we come to the end of the chapter, the brothers are going to speak now, and they said, "Too much,
too soon.
Not everybody is like me. Isn't that a mercy? There's plenty of times when I've said too much too soon. And there are times when I've said too little too late. But there's another voice, and it's the only voice that counts at the beginning of chapter 35, and God said, you know what God said? Enough at the right time. God always speaks that way. That was the only voice that mattered, was what God had to say. A dear child of God here this afternoon, from the ministry that you have been listening to that has been given to us ably by our brethren, when all is said and done, all that matters is what is God saying? It's to hear His voice. That's what we commenced with in our hymn today as we sung in view of this meeting, is to hear the shepherd speak. It is to hear the voice of God. When we come to chapter 33 really, it tells us why Jacob says so little so late. It's because he's a busy man. He's an occupied man. He would just say, as people look back and they admire Jacob, they say that he's just kind of an entrepreneur. He's getting at it, very successful. And after all, he's got to make a provision for the family. He's got a large family. He's got children that he's got to look after. But seemingly there's something in a very secular way that's consuming Jacob at the end of chapter 33. And when we get to chapter 34, he's the man that can't speak. You know, there are times, brethren, in our Christian experience where we can't speak. And when we do speak, we're in trouble. Because all people have to do is just go back in our past and say, what were you up to? What were you doing when your voice could have been heard? And so in chapter 34, Jacob is a busy man at the beginning, or chapter 33, he's a busy man. Chapter 34, he's a bitter man. Disaster has struck his family and has literally devastated the man. I tell you, it takes a good man not to get bitter when there's such an awful blow to the family that some of the dear saints of God have had to sustain. But when I get to chapter 35, at the beginning of it at least, I've got a better man. Why is a better man? Because he's going up to Bethel. He's going to higher ground. You see, the difficulty at the end of chapter 33 with Jacob is that Jacob is far too good a man to be so occupied, so taking up with building booths, so taken up with cattle, so taking up with getting those boys on in life, everything for the children. After all, if you had talked to him, it was obvious. That's why in chapter 34, he can't speak until the boys come. And that tells me something. Suddenly the family was speaking for him. I have to speak carefully here today, but even with four, you can believe me. There's times when they want to speak for Dad. Oh, yeah? They're going to tell him what to do. Here's what we think you should do. And as we've been hearing, they've got to be reminded now, just a minute. I'm responsible for this home. I'm responsible for what takes place in this life. Unfortunately, Jacob was so taken up with getting on and making a name. You know, I want to sound right this afternoon, but you know, if you took a snapshot, if you could have then, of that dear old man and kind of put it in slow motion, because he was a man on the move. Here he is limping from one building to another, pushing the ladder up here, getting this built, and bringing these cattle in. Can't you kind of see him directing the operation? And if you said to him, Jacob, you're a prince with God. Jacob, remember what just happened a few days ago. Remember the safe arrival, which you never thanked God for back at the beginning of chapter 29. Remember all that God has blessed you with. What are you up to here? What do you say? Listen, you know, the children have got to make it. We've got to give them so much, and we've got to give them a good start. And I want these boys to get on. The boys got on. But Daddy's little girl didn't make it. That's what made him an awful bitter man. You'll notice that in chapter 33, the last thing on his list is the altar. Finally, he just kind of pulls the business together, and I don't want to say it's an afterthought, but oh yes, the altar. And he builds there an altar. How different when you come to chapter 35, it's the first thing on the list. You see, Jacob had a lot of things going here. You'll notice that when Jacob speaks, you know who he's speaking for? Self. as usual. When the brothers speak, they speak for a sister. That's unusual. When God speaks, He speaks for all of them. That's most useful, most usual. And dear child of God, when God speaks, God has our good at heart. It's too bad that Jacob couldn't speak when at least he had the good of his daughter at heart. Let me speak to every father here today, and this isn't kind of a lesson in parental guiding today. But listen, dear father, I don't have to tell you that have daughters that you have a relationship and a responsibility to that girl that nobody else has. Now, she can be very close to her mother. She could even maybe kind of profess a bit of a, or kind of show almost a distance from you, but deep down there is a respect that that girl has for father that she has for nobody else. There is an effect that father has upon that girl. Did Jacob allow that effect to come too late? It's never too soon to start. Just to show that interest. How many times your brethren have come to us and said, you know, the family, and we all agree to that, had grown up so quickly, and they got away, and I wish I'd spent more time with them. You know, I have never had anybody come to me and say, you know, I'm just sorry I spent so much time with my children. Listen, brethren, dollars in a bank account for them going to university will not take the place of time that you can spend personally with that girl. That's where this man failed. That's a lesson that I've got to learn. That's a lesson that all of us have to learn. If I look back now and with two of them married and we start to speak and talk about things that happened in the home, and most of the things that happened in the home, not in the early part of the years that I've been in the work, and the latter ones I weigh a lot, but in the early years I was home. That was where I belonged, and that was where I'm glad I stayed. Even though it wasn't understood at times by brethren, it felt I should travel further afield. And I had a responsibility. One of the brethren that put his name on my letter of commendation made a statement, Mr. Lloyd Tallman, I will never forget. He says, whatever the work becomes to you, Murray, never let it be something that your children will look upon as something that took their father away from them. You take them with you. I'm speaking to some today. Come on, brother, how are you making out? How much time did you spend with that girl last week? How much time with that boy? So precious, so formative those years. Just to go with them somewhere and ask them to, I know, listen, they'll tell you like they used to tell me, come on, Ted, we don't want to go with you to St. John. We want to go with our friends. But you say, no, listen, you come with me. What for? That you can spend a little one-on-one conversation with them. See, Jacob couldn't relate to this girl. You'll notice that it does not say that he knew what happened. He heard it. That must have been devastating that a father didn't know what was going on with his daughter. There was another very subtle trap. And here's a girl that steps out of the home to see the daughters of the land by herself. Let me ask you this afternoon. When your daughter steps across the threshold of your home, brother, do you know where she's going? Now, I realize they reach an age when they don't necessarily want to tell you. That boy, when he leaves, do you know where he is? Well, that's lovely when it speaks of David and Jesse and even the brothers. They always knew where David was. They knew exactly where he was. They knew where he was going. There was nothing that caught them by surprise. But here's this man, and he's busy. He's building. He's buying fields. He's increasing the herds. He's getting on. He's building the booths. He's building himself a house. Come on, he's making a name for himself. Oh, sure, he's going to get an altar in there. He'll be at the meetings. He'll put that in. But somehow things are just out of kilter here. And now when we come to chapter 34, here's a man that should speak and he can't speak. Notice what it says in verse 5. And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah his daughter. Now his sons were with his cattle in the field, and Jacob held his peace until they were come. In other words, what are the boys going to say I should do? Isn't it sad that the man just couldn't rise to the occasion and address it as such? He held his peace. You know, that's the word that is given to us in Ephesians chapter 4. Wherefore, put away lying, and let every man speak peace with his neighbor. The word for lying there is defraud. It's the withholding. There's times when something should be said. Something has to be addressed. I know it's not easy. It's more difficult for some than it is for others. But, oh, Jacob must have wished a thousand times over that his voice had been heard in the ears of that girl just enough to know that Dad loved her. Dad cared for her. His daughter? Who did she really belong to? Well, if he outrightly understood the Psalms that we read later, they were just a heritage. They were something that was given to him from the Lord, and he was a steward of that child. You know, had David, or rather had Jacob, rather, just been a little more careful, a little more attention to that situation, a tragic, sad, immoral, historical record that we have in chapter 34 would never be in the pages of our Bible. What happened in those few moments, unfortunately, was going to permanently, historically, and morally, change a home and change a man. Now there's another voice that's going to be heard. Just before I go to the other, notice what Jacob has to say. Who's he speaking for? It's himself. He says, ye have troubled me. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, ye have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Perizzites and the Canaanites, among whom I dwell. And I being few in number, and they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house. And they said, should he deal with our sister as with an harlot? Jacob, that's always his language. I turn a few pages and I get to chapter 37 and he's a broken-hearted man again. Something's happened with the boys this time. He says, me have ye bereaved. Joseph is not. Simeon is not. And will ye take away Benjamin also? All these things are against me. You know, it's a pretty low day if all I can live my life for is me and how I look among the neighbors, how I shine among my contemporaries, how the business associates view me. In other words, there is nothing in Jacob's language about the name of the Lord or the reverence for that name that we've been hearing about. Like Jehoshaphat that we were hearing about at the beginning. The man's consumed. Finally, there's a wake-up call. He missed the first one. You say, what do I learn from this? Here's what I learned from this. Here's a man that had potential that he wasn't using. Listen, we live in a very demanding age. I realize, young brethren, and let me speak to you this afternoon just for a minute. I realize we live in a very, very competitive society, competitive world. Jobs aren't easy to come by. And ones that have them, even those with employment, aren't sure that they've got it Monday morning or Tuesday morning or whenever they go back to it. But God has blessed us. Really, brethren, God has blessed us. And we look around today and we think of just the conditions. God has been kind to us. God has blessed us. But let me say this. Whatever you're pursuing in life, whatever you're building for, don't you sacrifice responsibilities that God has given to you in form of family for the sake of a dollar that you think you're going to put in their pocket when they need it. It'll be the worst thing that ever happened to them. I want to come quickly to the brothers. The brothers are going to speak now. Can I give this a spiritual application this afternoon? Sure. These boys had a responsibility to their sister to maintain her purity. Listen, dear young brethren, this afternoon, spiritually speaking, nice to see right behavior. I would see nothing here in my movements, what little I have been for the first time in Vancouver, that would speak to me otherwise. Love to see a proper behavior between our young brethren and our young sisters, because remember, young brother, your responsibility is to protect her purity. Too bad they couldn't do that.
Well, why couldn't they do it? Because they're down in the field. It tells us at the beginning of the chapter, they're looking after Dad's cattle. Oh, Dad would have said they were the boys, but talk to the boys, they said they belong to Dad. A little confusion here.
You know what both of them were? They were excuses. How are you making out, young brother? So we were hearing last night in the evening ministry meeting from our brother Meekin, whatever you do, don't allow some trip alone across the threshold of your father's home that is going to bring something into your life that you will regret as long as you live. But the words of Paul to Timothy, keep thyself pure. They said, should he deal with our sisters with an harlot? What else could they say? They said too much too soon.
Oh, sure, they had to say something, so that's the best with what they could come up with.
But you know, I want to come quickly to chapter 35. Just very quickly. I want you to notice what God said. God's got something to say to Jacob. And you know, brethren and sisters, that's what matters. That's what counts today. God has got to say something to us.
Where else could God send Jacob? Jacob had been everywhere. Jacob was a man that journeyed.
Jacob's always on the move. Ever notice that with Jacob? And he journeyed, and he moved, and he went, and he ran.
Jacob's a man on the move. Jacob had a lot of things going, a lot of things to do. And we are a people on the move today. I wish at times not so much, but we're on the move. But and God said unto him at the beginning of chapter 35, Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel, and give it an occasional visit. No. Go up to Bethel and dwell there. Live there. My, it's nice to see brethren and sisters and that little local company, that little testimony. That's their life. That's their life. Their work, their business, whatever it might be. You know I'm not being hard on businessmen today. Any harder than I am on a man that's doing work or employment for somebody else. But where are we dwelling? Where dwellest thou? What's our occupation? What's number one? Where do our priorities lie? You dwell at Bethel. God will take care of the business.
I'd love to see that man shutting down the business, packing up the family, and says, we're going up to Bethel.
Brethren and sisters, that's where we want to go from the Vancouver Conference. We want to get to higher ground. We have a world out there that'll tear us down, that'll any day take us, they'll buy us a ticket to Shechem any day. But it's costly business to go up to Bethel. God says, Jacob, up to Bethel. Too bad he hadn't pushed on from there at chapter 33. But somehow he couldn't make it. These events had to take place. And he says, make there an altar unto God that appeared to thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau thy brother.
You know what this man's trying to do? He's trying to outrun a guilty past. Pretty hard to do.
Trying to get away from a past of guilt. Trying to outrun it, but it's catching up to him. And all he had to do?
By moving to Bethel, he was thereby acknowledging that it is God that has preserved my past.
And listen, brethren and sisters, I think sometimes we forget it and need to be reminded of it, reminded all of us of it. It has been Bethel. It has been the house of God that has preserved us. Where would we be today? Where would this company be today if there wasn't scattered throughout this city and up the coast and south of us into the United States, little companies gathered to the name of the Lord Jesus Christ? Brethren, they are preservatives to us. Without them, we can't survive. We can't make it. That's why the attack of the enemy upon it. That's why so many fatal blows have been lobbed and launched against those little gathering centers. That's your preservation, brother. Stick with it. Stand by it. It's the house of God.
Now Jacob speaks again.
Well, it's a different man in chapter 35. Now he's going to speak to the house. Well, Jacob, why couldn't you speak to the house in chapter 33? Too busy. Got time to speak to your house, brother? I say, it's just myself and my wife. That's enough.
And you sit down
and before God, lay out what your priorities are. What comes first in your life? I often tell people, I never had to say to my father on Thursday night, are we going to meeting tonight or not? He never left us with that confusion. That sun could be shining ever so brightly in a spring day, and so many acres to be planted, and so many chickens to be looked after, and so much work to be done, but I knew we were going to prayer meeting. Your family know what night prayer meeting night is? If they don't, ask the neighbor. He usually knows. And I'm not telling stories out of school. One of our dear Christians tells it on himself. But one night he was real busy and decided to stay home. And a neighbor came across, leaned over the fence, and he said to him, why are you home? Well, he said, you know, he said, what can I do? He said, I couldn't make an excuse to the neighbor. He said, you're always gone. What are you home for? Know the truth of it? He hasn't missed prayer meeting night since. I'll tell you, he's got good reason. God has come in a marvelous way in that family and worked in salvation. He's got a boy right now. He's longing to see saved, and I'm longing to see him saved too. Ah, brethren, we owe so much to Bethel, to the house of God. Let's get up there at this conference. Let's get to the higher ground. Let's get to the place of safety. Let's obey the voice of God. But just a minute now, there's a few things that got to be attended to. Jacob said unto them, put away the strange gods that are among you. Now that sounds like a very innocent term, that among you. But that expression, among you, is in the midst of you. Put away the strange gods that are in the midst of you. Oh, come on. What's wrong with a few bracelets and a few ornaments and a few, they're kind of innocent things. What's wrong with that? I say, here he goes. He's going to blast us now for this. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I wouldn't waste my time. But you know what Jacob did realize? They were gods to these people. When you touch them, you touch the person. He said, put away the strange gods that are in the midst of you. Oh, come on, dear child of God, brethren and sisters included. I'm not just speaking of things that we can wear. But I'm thinking of lives that we live that become gods that are in the midst of us. In other words, our life is wrapped around a little bit of that. And it's not in keeping with the house of God. He said, put away the strange gods that are in the midst of you. They take off their earrings. And they give them to Jacob, and he buries them under the yoke. What happens as a result of that? The terror of the Lord is around. And all the land around about Jacob, because they heard what Bethel had done for him. Brethren and sisters, what Bethel did for this man, Bethel does for us today. Let me ask you a question just as I sit down. Did you ever meet a brother or a sister that spent and give the whole of their life to the assembly and the things of God? And they said to you, I'm sorry that that was the pursuit of my life. I feel that I neglected my family at the expense of going to meeting and living for God. You never heard anybody speak like that ever. You never will. Do you know what they will say? The most committed, the most devoted? One expression. I wished I had given more.